From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is unfortunately more of a disconnect, a struggle for young people, primarily boys, to handle barriers in their relationships. Last week, our country saw another mass school shooting. That investigation remains open, and we're still learning what exactly happened before the shootings took place. But various accounts detail a boy, 17 years old, who had pursued a girl, a young woman. The boy couldn't handle rejection from the young woman. The boy's father said recently that his son should be viewed as a victim of bullying, not a monster, not a mass killer. This hour, we want to discuss what we are teaching kids, and boys in particular, about boundaries in relationships. Are we failing when it comes to preparing boys how to handle a breakup or rejection? How concerned should we be with the online forces that describe sex and women as something that young men are entitled to? And parents, we want to hear from you this hour. We'd like to know what you teach your boys about these issues. My guests include Pamela Graham, Prevention Education and Training Manager for Willow Domestic Violence Center. Pamela, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Also, welcome to Megan DeChanteauvieux, Director of Development and Marketing for Willow Domestic Violence Center. Megan, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you.
I said to our guests before the hour began, I wish the circumstances were different. And what I don't want to do is to overgeneralize recent tragic events. So I mentioned Santa Fe High School outside Houston. We could also look at Toronto, where a man described as an incel, which is a term I had never heard until a few weeks ago, drove a bus into a crowd of people and killed 10 more people there. Incel, standing for involuntary celibate, and a term that has an online community of people who, if you read their writings and some of their postings, they talk about sex as a commodity to which they are entitled. Are we overgeneralizing here, Pamela, or do we have a real problem on our hands with this?
Well, we're hearing an awful lot about it. And also, you know, with the increase of access through all the stuff that we can get through the web, then people are probably ending up going in places that they normally would not be going. So there's been something that's happened that, you know, maybe it's also because of gaming that we started to desensitize against the violence and think it's not that big of a deal either. But certainly we have easier access to change the minds of somebody who's struggling.
I think online too gives people a platform they wouldn't have had before to be able to reach out to people and to convince them that somehow they're being wronged by not being accepted by many women.
Yeah. I don't want to overly publicize what I'm about to say next, but it is true that some of these mass killers have devoted followings online. People will write loving tributes to someone who is an incel or someone who committed acts of violence after feeling rejection. And I already have a bunch of comments from listeners and parents in particular, and we're going to work through some of those because this is complex. But I guess what I want to do is start with a tweet that went viral that sparked a lot of response. And I'll ask our guests what they think about this because I think that will kick off our question on what we are teaching our kids, particularly young boys. And I'm going to focus on young boys this hour because I think most of the violence that we're seeing happens at the hands of boys or young men. So a woman named Addie on Twitter wrote the following, and it has gone super nuclear viral. She said, "My teenage nephew told me he asked a girl out and she turned him down. I said, 'You know what to do now, right?' And he said, 'I know, I know. Keep trying.' And I said, 'No, leave her alone. She gave you an answer.' He was shocked. No one had told him that before. Teach your boys." End quote. Megan, do you agree with that sentiment?
I think as parents, it's up to us to really share with our kids what the responsible approach is to dating and healthy relationships. And I think I have a 9-year-old boy who will be approaching this age pretty soon where he'll start having relationships with his friends in his classroom that go to a different level. And we have taught from the very beginning that you need to listen and respect the person that you're talking with, and what they say matters. And you have to have the response to that and prepare your boys for that rejection. So they might say, "Will you go out with me?" And someone says no. And they say, "Okay, well, let's still be friends," and not get mad because the little girl or the little boy says no.
How about the question of whether he should have said, as he did, he said to his aunt, I know, keep trying. And she said, no, do not keep trying.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
You agree with her?
Yeah, I do. Especially if the little girl said no, then that's her answer. And he can keep in a relationship with her and remain friends. And maybe it will turn into something that he'd like to see in the future. But don't just drop the friendship. But absolutely don't keep trying and pushing and pressuring her to do something she's not interested in.
Okay, Pamela.
You know, the odd thing about it, though, the WILL Foundation of our prevention education program that we support the local health teachers who have us in is based on healthy, unhealthy, and dangerous relationships. And when we get to the point that we're talking about healthy relationships or a personal right, anything less than that, is we also say the balance of the universe is with unhealthy relationships exist there. They will happen to us all. And not everybody is for us. And who wants to be with somebody who's just not for them? And who wants to be somebody with them for them that they're just, you know, vice versa. So really, for some reason or another, we've got to get out of the land of the shame and the blame if somebody does not want to date somebody or it's not just for them. These are learning experiences. These are successes because you have the personal right to look until you land. And if somebody says, no, this isn't for me. No, I don't want to date. No, I don't date. That somebody says that we really get to the place that we can respect the no without feeling the blame and shame. Blame and shame is going to put us all in the ground way faster than anything else. So if we can get to the point to say, hey, there's no shame with having somebody tell you no, it just means you're just not for them and they're not for you. So if we can frame it to have it be more of a healthier thing, then people won't be walking away feeling rejected or like it's terrible. I always say to folks, you want somebody to love you for who you are, not because they're scared to death not to love you. And it makes people kind of start to think because we've got the personal right to be safe and have healthy relationships. But it doesn't mean everybody is going to be for us, or should they be?
Well, let me read some of the responses that when I reposted that tweet a couple of hours ago. Even our listeners today are having disagreement on Addie's position and what she's telling her teenage nephew. Jason says, that tweet is overly simplistic and pretty ridiculous overall. You can continue to have an interest without it turning into harassment. Alyssa wrote back and said, her point is not overly simplistic. The earlier boundaries are taught, the better off we will be. My son and daughter are being taught healthy boundaries. Changing the culture early is imperative. No more of this boys will be boys. And Jen says, actually, it is simplistic. If your interest in a female isn't returned, find a different interest. Don't harass her, badger her, talk about her behind her back, find excuses to bump into her. Just leave her alone and maybe wish her well. Both of my girls have been legit harassed for not returning more than friendship to an admirer. It's extremely damaging and scary. We're talking since age 11, by the way. They don't owe any boy anything. So, those are some just listeners, a strong debate going on. Let's start with Jason, who says, you can continue to have an interest, even pursue an interest in someone, even after they say no, without it being harassment. And some of what Jason's saying is reflected by others who have written in to say, well, whatever happened to hard to get? That I've had men listening to the program say, well, I grew up and, you know, girls often played hard to get, and that was all part of the game, and, you know, you got to keep working at it. And, now that dynamic is gone because we would all be considered harassers. You know, so Jason's writing to say, come on, it's not all harassment just because they say no the first time and you continue to pursue it. Pamela?
Yeah, so we finally are folks. Now when I'm going to live in the land of dating and domestic violence of 1 in 3 women, 1 in 4 men. Well, when we talk about healthy, unhealthy, and dangerous relationships, we're gender neutral in the sense that this could happen to females with male intimate partners, males with female intimate partners, and people in same-sex relationships. So to stay true of what we do, I'll just stay kind of in that land. But nobody should have to end up being in a relationship because they were exhausted or they relented finally because it was just too much. You know, the worrisome part about the shooting is because of the rejection, because she said no. I was telling Megan on the way over here, does that mean people are going to be afraid to say, no, this isn't for me. I'm not dating. I'm not interested. And will people say yes now because of the fear of what the outcome will be?
I am very concerned about girls and young women feeling that way, hearing about this violence and thinking, can I afford to say no?
And does it come down to personal rights and privilege? And do we have equality? And if we don't have equality, we're going to have power and control. And do we need to kind of look at that? So, you know, nobody should be put in a place that they say no and that it's not heard. Because if anybody's going to say no, we should respect it and say, okay, are you comfortable if we stay friends? Like, set the clear boundary, because we all have the personal right to be safe, and nobody should have to be saying yes beyond the place of no.
Okay. Megan, how do you feel about Jason's comments there that you can continue to pursue an interest in a girl or a woman, a classmate, even if she says no, and it doesn't always turn into harassment?
I think if we are looking to a vision of healthy relationships in our community with our young people and adults as well, we're coming from a place where honesty is really important in relationships, and that direct feedback and that consent and respect and, as Pamela said, not fear. So if we're looking for relationships and we're basing them out of being afraid of what might happen if I say no, I think that's a problem. If we look at our young people and the games that you reference that people play in dating, if we're stealing a boy's hat in first grade and that means that we like him, or, playing hard to get, these games can be perceived as very dangerous because they set up a relationship where kids think that it's okay to keep trying and keep stealing the hat and keep harassing someone who will then suddenly decide that they like you. But what is that based on?
So you think it goes back that far?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I actually, in kindergarten last year, my daughter had a situation with a boy in her class who kissed her on the stairs, and she informed the teacher, and the teacher said, "Well, you two work it out together. I think he just likes you."
What do you want the teacher to say in that moment?
That is absolutely not okay. Your body is your body. These are your boundaries. And then talk to the boy about how he needs to respect his friend. And if she doesn't like that, you have to ask first and make sure it's okay.
Okay. What would you have hoped for the teacher to say there, Pamela?
The same thing. Nobody has a right to enter in. When my son was little, my son's 40, when my son was little, it was put out your arms and do a circle, and nobody's allowed within that circle without permission. So it's back to the respect of personal space, and that's both a male and a female personal right. And certainly nobody should take it upon themselves to kiss anybody at any age, and that's why the upstream education piece is so important. Start talking about it so early.
And well, physical as well as psychological. So I love that idea of putting your arms out and this is your space. And if we could come up with a way to do that with our brains as well, that no one has the right to manipulate or control my thoughts or behaviors based on fear, if we had that arm's length away of control over our own selves, it'd be incredible.
As a parent, what else did you do when you found out what happened at school and what the teacher said?
Well, I talked with my daughter about it and what I thought should have happened, and then I went and talked with the teacher.
Were they receptive?
Yes, I think that she understood, but I wonder about sort of the mainstream culture and these ideas that games are games and kids are kids and kids, you know, make these mistakes and they are young. This was kindergarten, so we need to give that little boy space also to understand why that wasn't
sure.
Okay to cross that boundary. And they're barely out of the age where they bite people, you know, so it's one of those things that can set up a lifelong pattern for each of those kids.
Of not knowing boundaries.
Yes.
Yes.
So... listeners, especially with what I'm about to say, I'm going to get some eye rolls with what I'm about to say, but I'm going to put something out there. And then I want to invite feedback from our listeners on what you are teaching your kids and your boys. If you think we're going astray with any of this, if you want to push back or offer a different perspective, that's fine. 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Some of what I'm observing is, and maybe as you become a parent, you start to really figure out this stuff, or at least pay attention to this stuff more. Mm-hmm. And some of what I'm observing is just how socialized we are to this dynamic of males chase females. Females are prizes to be won, or something you are entitled to or can't live without and must take. So I was listening to a 1980s music playlist the other day.
Oh, no.
And I just want to give you a list of four songs in a row that I heard. And it occurred to me with every song, these are huge hits, and these are just, the messages were horrifying. So, Drive by the Cars. Who's going to take you home tonight? The whole song is about how pathetic the female subject is, and the guy saying, you know, Who's going to pay attention to your dreams? You know, who's going to plug your ears when you scream? You know, I could have done it, but I guess you don't need me. Like, you're not going to be able to do anything on your own. It is so belittling and minimizing of any sort of agency. So that's drive-by cars. If You Leave by OMD. If You Leave, Don't Leave Now. I can't wait a single day. You know, it's like, no, you cannot leave me. My very existence depends on you. I can't allow you to leave. Do You Really Want to Hurt Me by Culture Club? Do you really want to make me cry? How about I can, you know, be a fully functioning, rational person even if you decide to end this relationship, and even if I do cry, it's not your responsibility to fix me. But that would be a long song title and less popular. then you know what came on, and for a second I was like, oh, a little break from the Me Too stuff. It was You Spin Me Round. But then the more I listened to that, I thought, open up your loving arms, watch out, here I come.
Yep.
I mean, it was borderline aggressively, I'm a heat-seeking missile, and you're not going to be able to avoid me whether you like it or not. I know, you want to call and make fun of me for this, but I'm listening to these going, we're laughing, we're socializing, it's in the movies, it's in the popular
music. Every movie. It's in every scary movie.
All right, so you're nodding. Am I off base here?
No, and it's interesting too, and I've been with Willow for 5 years now, and before I started in this work and really understanding the world of dating and domestic violence, it's astonishing to me how much in our pop culture is abusive and celebrating that abuse. So the romantic relationship portrays stalking and harassment and physical violence and obsessive jealousy and control as something that we should be moving towards, or as a romantic end, when I might have just kind of blown that off before. And now I've seen too much, and I understand too much about the world of domestic violence and the people that we work with, the families we serve, and what they're experiencing. It's very raw when I listen to lyrics like that. I'm like, oh yes, that happened to someone that I met last week. And so these situations can escalate and become incredibly dangerous, and they start with this normalizing of that behavior that's very abusive.
Super manipulating. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. Pamela, am I off base here? What you're saying?
No, you're not, because things have become the social norm. It wasn't I would say it was 5 years ago now. I was in a classroom and we were going through the 22 abuses of verbal abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual and economic abuse. And it got to be the first part, we were talking about verbal abuse, and a kid in the class says, hey, y'all, don't pay any attention to this, because if name-calling, put-downs, and harsh tone of voice is bad and it's part of an abusive relationship, nobody here is going to have a relationship. And it's kind of because verbal abuse has become the social norm. But we always kind of talk and say, okay, if you're the victim of the social norm, you should be able to go to a person and say, you might not know this about me, but when I say no, I really mean no. I do not mean yes, and that's not going to change. And I hope you respect me because I'm respecting you and how I'm telling you about this. If it's a person who's abusive, you can say, you might not know this about me. And what people who choose to be abusive do is they'll belittle it. They'll minimize it. They'll say, I was just joking. You took it too seriously. So they might not use it against them for a while, but when they do, they're going to come back and say, oh, are you going to say no to me again? So we can take the social norm and we can teach around it, because when people kind of talk along with the social norm to say that doesn't work for me, if it's respected and heard and then the boundary is set, then you should be able to be okay. But when it's not, then everybody should be highly red alert.
Well, let me get some listener feedback here. And I'm going to start with Karen in Henrietta. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi, thank you. I'm listening to this talk and the idea of the respect that boys need to have for girls, and not, I really think as we keep talking about respect for the other person, we really have to include something about the respect for oneself.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
If a boy is if the boy is ignoring the actual existence of the girl as a human being, what is it he's feeling about himself? But the other thing I'm concerned about is the sensitive boy who goes off and then shoots himself. And, you know, a lot of this happens on the college level, and it's not always publicized, but it's more the boys that are the concern, because they have guns, and once they do it, it's done. You can't talk, it's over. So I'm concerned about that the idea of rejection on a boy who turns it against himself. And again, I really think it's about how do we help all of these individuals value their own lives?
Yep. Yeah.
Thank you, Karen. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's the worthiness piece. You know, it's so the other thing that we find when we're out in the community and we're talking about healthy relationships, we're finding that people, when you say to somebody, tell me the things that are important to you in a healthy relationship, and they'll say respect, they'll say equality, they'll say all the stuff we all know, safe and all that stuff. Where we start to fall apart as a community is for some reason or another, and maybe it speaks to the shame and blame kind of culture that we live in, that folks are not feeling worthy. Wherever they're getting that message, they're not feeling worthy. Not feeling worthy. My mom and dad said that I've been a problem for them since the get-go. I'm not fitting in well. I don't belong here. I'm not worthy of the good stuff. I'm not worthy of healthy. I'm not worthy of it because of drug or alcohol, or I'm not worthy of it because of all the comments I get on social media. There's so many places that we all make male and female, young and old, are getting messages that we are not worthy of the good stuff and that you should be lucky if you get anything. And we need to change that message. Everybody is worthy of a healthy relationship. Everybody is worthy of respect. Everybody is worthy to be able to have the opportunity to heal and to grow from our life experiences. And that's regardless of the message. So if anything, if we can be in the land that you are worthy, because if we say to young boys, man up, stop crying. We have to kind of give them a real vision of man up. What's man upping to a 3-year-old? What's man upping to a 5-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 30-year-old, a 75-year-old? You know, so it's kind of like, so men, men are allowed to be emotional, but I've never heard a man talk about the birth of his baby without being emotional. I've never heard a man talk about witnessing the birth of their baby and not crying. So if we can get out of the shame and blame of all this stuff, then we'll maybe be in the place that we're more worthy of the healthy stuff, and it will be more natural for us, and it won't be shameful.
I want to get Valerie's question that I think really captures some of the concern that people have about parents being only able to do so much. Go ahead, Valerie.
Hi, so I guess I have a two-part question. I'm wondering if the guests have any opinion on whether schools should share the burden of educating children about healthy, non-shameful sexual behaviors at their young age, and then also if they have any tips or suggestions for parents that, you know, are already possibly struggling to monitor their children's online and social media activity to guard against going down the wrong path.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great point and question. Pamela, Megan, go ahead.
This is the really cool thing, and I can speak specifically to Monroe County because Willow Prevention Programs are in the schools.
There is the schools, as in all of the schools?
Yes. In every school, there's going to be health classes. In every school, there's committed health teachers who cover the entire range of development, nutrition, relationships, how to have the conversations, how to break up.
How to break up.
I know the health teachers that we go in talk about how to have the conversation, how to be assertive. they talk about self-esteem. This is happening. The kids are in the curriculum.
I got to ask on the breakup question. Are you teaching primarily girls how to break up with boys? Are you teaching boys how to handle it?
They're all getting the same message at the same time, okay, which is important, because then it's like these news shows, right? People call in, we get a different array of opinions, and we're able to answer them, so everybody has the food of thought all at the same time. So they're getting, what does it look like? It's ongoing. The health classes are 10 weeks. Some schools have health classes for half of a year. Kids, different school districts districts are set up very differently. I just supported some school nurses last night in one of the local school districts. And in their district, kids are getting health class from 6th to 8th grade and then getting it twice during their high school that they can take at any time. So sophomore, senior year. The DASA, the Dignity and Safety Act, says that kids need to, this is like the Title IX of the pre-K through 12. So it's built into the system. It's already happening. We have the privilege to go in and support. So it is happening. Parents usually get even permission slips to allow certain discussions to have happen. Maybe what needs to start to happen is that we lift up and advertise better on the stuff that's going on in communities. Evan, you even said in response to the shooting, maybe we need to have more conversations on teaching healthy relationships. We are all out there and we are doing it, but maybe we need to mainstream it more so when this stuff goes viral that we stay in the land that everybody has the personal right. Go to your school counselor. Go to your kid's teacher. If your school does not have a strong program, tell them about DASA. See what the policies and procedures are in this stuff. We're all in this together. It cannot be the responsibility of just one part.
Megan?
I think speaking to the breakup question, when you have a child who can't handle rejection, going back to the last comment as well, kind of pulling it all in, there's an idea in our culture of a perfect life and the way that we should all be going towards something. And I think that pairing up in a romantic relationship is part of that, and sometimes at all costs. And so people will stay in that relationship, or the idea that you win the girl and you win, as you reference those songs, that we have this concept that that is the ultimate goal of all of this, is to get married and have this white picket fence and this perfect life. Dream job, all of it, but it comes from a place where that's success. And if we look at our kids and how we're able to help define for them different versions of success and what a healthy relationship actually looks like, and you don't have to start at age 12 because of all the peer pressure from all of your friends, or age 10 or age 9, like, you can just have good friendships and there isn't all that pressure to go get the girl, and that means that you somehow won the game.
There's a whole bunch of research that's coming out of the University of Houston right now, and it's based in the Dr. Brené Brown research stuff. And she does an entire thing about the difference of teaching kids of the difference between fitting in and belonging. And when kids have to go off to a school or be in a community or be a part of a group, and that they're fitting in, that the fit-in piece is based in blame and shame. Why aren't you fitting in better? Shame on you for not looking like everybody else and doing what everybody else is. Belonging means you get to be exactly who you are, and you still belong in this school, and you still belong in this community. So when we start thinking about that land in relationships, part of belonging means there are kids out here with the last thing on the face of the earth they ever want to do is even have a relationship. And to send the message out to kids or even adults, because the judgment is big in that pot, that we say, you don't even have to date anybody else. It does not define the success of who you are as a person. The healthiest relationship you can have with yourself is you are who you are, and the rest is in addition to. So even saying that it's a success to choose not to be in one, that way if people aren't, it's not a failure, it's not a rejection, it's okay, you belong here.
That's so well said, my God. Monica writes to us and says, young men do not struggle with rejection. What they are is emboldened by entitlement. They feel entitled to, quote, grab that blank, entitled to control the body of women, entitled to 20 minutes of action. That's from Monica. She's referencing what Donald Trump said in that Access Hollywood tape. And I want to ask a question that is not intended to be political, because let me preface this by saying, when I think of political leadership who is entirely in the opposite direction, I can think of two no more probably kind, genteel, respectful people that I can probably think of than Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. This is not a matter of a political party. But when you have the president of the United States now on tape saying, just take it, just take, just kiss, just grab it, and boasting about his own power and prestige allowing him to do that, I want to ask if you think that that kind of entitlement, number one, spurs usually young boys to think, I want to be successful, I want to have money and power, and if I can do that, then I can do that. Or is that overstating?
It sets a tone. So, you know, they kind of say that peer education is the best way to educate kids. You know, when the good, bad, and ugly, everybody goes to each other. So there may be a piece of that that's powerful within our genders. So if we have a man saying to a society that that's okay, it does set the tone. But the beautiful thing about it is there are plenty of men out there that will balance that message. Evan, this is a while back. I went on SUNY Brockport's campus to work with sports teams on how to support each other through relationships. The day I went to SUNY Brockport's football team, the coach was so respectful of the message and of me as an advocate being there to talk to a team on how to support each other. He had 125 young men take their knee and they listened. And that was amazing. And I will never forget that football coach. His name's Jason. Hi, Jason, if you're out there. And it's an amazing thing because that coach had a beautiful influence over those young men that they got to feel the respect. And I remember getting in my car and I was just in awe of that experience because we do have a beautiful place that we can influence for the greater good of all also. So if the balance of the universe is there's going to be a tone set that's less than appropriate, we will always have people who will come up to the line and reset the message.
Megan, what do you think, Megan?
That also speaks to, you know, all politics are local. And we have at the federal level a large platform with a message that may be not consistent with our values and perhaps dangerous. But we have people at the local level and our coaches and our teachers and our peers and fathers and mothers and friends and this aunt who said something to her nephew. I mean, there are so many examples of adults who are that loving, trusting, caring person who can kind of set the right course for our children.
Let me read, there's so much here. I mean, the feedback on this is, some of it's just heartbreaking stuff. Let me read a couple of emails and then I'm going to take it in a slightly different direction. We're talking, by the way, about what we teach our kids, primarily our young boys, about understanding relationship boundaries, handling a breakup, handling rejection. Last week there was a mass shooting, as you know, outside Houston, Texas, at Santa Fe High School. And there are various reports, and you don't want to overdo one story, but it was part of the reporting on that was that this was a 17-year-old who took a gun into school, and one of the first people he shot was a young woman who rejected his advances, as if that is a logical response to this. And that's not the only time this has happened, unfortunately. So we're talking to Pamela Graham and Megan DeChateauview from Willow Domestic Violence Center about this. I'm going to get some more of your feedback now. Tina writes and says, my 12-year-old daughter and her girlfriend were telling me about school on a recent day, and to my shock, they told me about a boy in their class who told the one young lady in a joking manner that he was going to rape her. I don't remember the exact context other than the girl said it was a joke. I was so horrified, but it was even more upsetting that the girls were actually defending it and said he was just joking. They did not see it as a problem. I lectured them that rape is never funny, and it is never acceptable to say that to someone. It didn't seem to change their opinions, though. They're 12. Seriously, what the hell is happening to our society? I was blindsided and flabbergasted and really didn't know the best way for me to respond. So, thoughts from the experts on your panel.
Keep saying it. Just keep saying it. Say it over and over and over again.
She was right to say what she said.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not sugarcoat. If the word is being used, we have to really say, do you know what that means? Do you know how serious that is? There's nothing funny about that. We just keep lifting it up on saying you've got the personal right for a healthy relationship. Anything less than that's not okay. I heard a doctor say to me this morning that when people come to their medical office, they want to say healthy things 7 times. So like if blood pressure is a problem, so how can we support you to not use salt? How can we support you? Like, oh, I can do this. So if you do a positive message 3 to 7 times, it gets ingrained in our brain. We just keep having the conversation. It adds a fork in a road. It provides an intersection that normally wouldn't be there if we were to pass it over. Choose the discomfort over, choose the discomfort in the conversation rather than dismissing it because we don't know what to say.
So Pamela, if you're that mom and you were stunned at these 12-year-olds who said, no, he was just kidding about raping us.
Yeah.
and you've had, and you, and this has been sitting with you for a few days. Maybe you, you find a time.
Let's go back and revisit it.
Hey, I hate to do this, but I'm not done with this.
Well, not even say I hate to do this.
Yeah, I've got
to
do this.
Just kind of say, you know, hey, how was school today? How's everything going? You know, we always say there's a homeschool friendship relationship kind of connection. We should every day be checking in with our kids. How was school for you today? How was your sports activities? How are your friendships going? How are your other relationships going? Kids are very good about talking about other kids. Sometimes you can get an insight on that. Just check in every day, but revisit it. How was it? How was it with that boy who mentioned that? Were there any more things that were said that made you feel uncomfortable or made you feel like it was a joke? Because I can't tell you enough how important you are to me, and nothing about rape will ever be funny. So we can revisit it just by continually reaving it into the conversation. The more we say it, the less uncomfortable we'll be about it.
And I think of Megan, and I think of the kiss on the stairwell at school.
Yes.
And I think of boys and girls maturing, generally speaking, at different rates. And I've got a 6-year-old boy, and if I get a phone call someday, then he kissed a girl. It was just sort of playing around, but, you know, made her uncomfortable. Or he joked and used the word rape. Boys will make, people will make mistakes. I would want to know, as the parent of a boy, that was said. Just so we can have that conversation.
Re-educate around it.
Because there are times where people joke inappropriately, but that doesn't make it okay. And that maybe opens the door to education.
And the reaction from the girls, too. These are 12-year-old girls, and they're laughing in response to this. I want to say, too, don't despair that your girls don't get it, because laughter can also be a way of deflecting fear.
It's emotion.
And if they are doing that, you know, reaction to that joke that was very inappropriate and might have scared them a little bit, they're laughing to form an alignment with this person who is saying these jokes that are inappropriate. So if you look at that in an abusive relationship, you see often the survivor will do things to sort of side with the abuser and try to deflect that anger or abuse in a way that, okay, we're in this together, no big deal, you know, don't hurt me. So the girls might be responding in that way, where it's actually fear and it's coming out as laughter. So don't worry.
Ian writes to us and says, "Hi, Evan. I recently had a relationship end with a female partner. She told me that she wanted to end our relationship and not continue to be friends. I agreed, and we went our own way. A week later, I received a text asking why I haven't tried to reach out to her or why I hadn't tried to change her mind. Well, I learned long ago not to chase someone who doesn't want to be with you, and that never works out. This feeling by her of wanting to be chased is something that I think is part of culture and is related to all those songs you just brought up. Great show on this." That's from Ian.
Ian, how wonderful that you shared that, and how wonderful that you were able to say this relationship is just not for me. You know, sometimes we have to live in the land of maybe. Maybe this relationship not working out is going to be the best thing that ever happened to me because of what I learned from it. How powerful and mighty you are. And I'm happy that you had that experience, because I'm hearing a lot of self-worth in you, and that you know that you're worthy of a healthy one, and that it's okay for you to move forward and you're going to be okay.
Yeah, here's Brad saying, "I had a similar experience once. My dad looked at me and said, 'Not everyone likes steak either, son. Move on.' I intend to convey that idea to my sons and daughters. If you like someone, tell them. If they don't reciprocate, acknowledge that. Ask politely if they will tell you should they have a change of heart, and move on.
Excellent.
It won't always be easy, I'll grant, but you cannot pester someone into loving you." That comes from Brad. I promised that I would try to air out if there are other ideas or a little pushback, and I'm going to entertain that now with our guests from Willow Domestic Violence Center. And I'm going to start with a question, because here's a term we hear a lot of. I'll start with you on this, Megan. Toxic masculinity. Is it a thing? Is it real?
I believe so, yes. And we see it in our culture in many ways in those songs that you referenced. And I think that there's a potential for that to happen. I don't think that men are intrinsically abusive. As I said last time I was on the show, it's just not something that's in anyone's character. I think it's our culture that can allow that to happen and promote that kind of behavior. That being said, there are also many women who are abusive in abusive relationships. So I don't believe that toxic masculinity is an excuse for this behavior. And I think when we look at these situations that this is bringing us together today with the mass shootings, there is a known link between mass shootings and domestic violence, that over half of the mass shootings since 2009 have involved a shooter who had a history of domestic violence or convictions against them. And that's just reported information. So and they were all male. So we are seeing this link between this version of toxic masculinity and then what the most dangerous result can be.
Okay. Is there a short definition for you, Pamela, of toxic masculinity?
Well, there certainly is some really good resources out there that people can kind of look at. There's a documentary that's called Misrepresentation that really absolutely everybody should watch. It's how women are depicted in society. And then there's the counterpart one is Masks We Wear. And it talks about really the masks that males end up putting on because of societal pressures. And it's really interesting and mind-changing to think about that. So for anybody who's out there, if they can reach out and find those two resources, it will be a really interesting perspective on how society as a whole has just molded us and people none of us set out to be.
I want to listen to a clip, and let me preface this. Here are some statistics that were recently brought up about the way young boys and men may be struggling in this country in certain ways. Men are twice as likely to become addicted to alcohol or drugs. 77% of all suicides in America are committed by men. 1997 to 2014, the suicide rate among men increased 43%, predominantly white men. And this came up on Tucker Carlson's Fox News show. He does not buy the notion of toxic masculinity, and his guest did not either. They offered a different view of why so many boys, in their view, are struggling with rejection, withdrawing, those kinds of things. Not to, I don't think, at all, to justify mass shootings, but trying to understand some of the psyche behind it. And so yesterday I invoked the name of someone who's having this cultural moment, a psychologist from the University of Toronto, Jordan Peterson, who's written books. He's got millions upon millions of fans and views online, big profile in the New York Times recently, been profiled just about everywhere. And this is what Jordan Peterson said to Tucker Carlson about his view that, number one, toxic masculinity is not real. The patriarchy is not something just to be attacked as a negative force. He thinks hierarchies are natural in society. And that he thinks that boys are being cultured to hate themselves and that this comes with bad results. Let's listen to what he said.
Well, how could you feel good about that? I mean, if you're made out to be, a potential manifestation of rape culture, if you're part of toxic masculinity, if your competitive drive is regarded as part of a tyrannical impulse, if the heritage to which you are, to which you belong, is regarded as an oppressive patriarchy, then how in the world are you going to step forward with confidence and shoulder that what would you call it, that burden? Why wouldn't you just step aside and retreat, which is exactly what's happening?
All right, Megan Chateauvieux, I'm going to start with you. Are we conditioning boys unfairly to think that they are part of an over-aggressive, toxically masculine rape culture that doesn't really exist?
It's interesting, the part of that quote about shouldering the burden. So the expectation is that young boys should grow up shouldering the burden of being super hyper-masculine and aggressive in these ways. Did I listen to that correctly?
Yeah, I think he's saying that if you program boys to say, hey, you might be, you know, if you're competitive, which Peterson views as simply part of being masculine, that you are probably going to be part of, be pilloried as some kind of manifestation of rape culture or the patriarchy, that we are setting boys up to withdraw from society as opposed to engage from it.
Oh, that's an incredibly dark view, and a view of boys that doesn't give them much agency over their own decisions either. That's very sad to me that's happening in the mainstream culture. That boys have the opportunity to choose their life's path just the same way that girls do, and that the characteristics that might be associated with masculinity, like competitiveness, also exist in girls. And I don't think that boys are set up to fail. And if they are feeling they need to retreat from that narrative of themselves as these hyper-masculine, aggressive brutes, that I don't see that playing out in my life in any way or in the work that we do.
You know, I think about my poor son growing up with a mom who's a domestic violence victims advocate and who was a fine athlete within his own time. And I remember that definitely his perceptions of women in the world depended on who was coaching him at the moment. He had a father who hugged him. He had a dad who kissed him. We cried in our family. We do the work. We meet each other where we're at. And in high school and in college, suddenly he was coming home and we had a very different person depending on who had the biggest influence on him in the moment. What was lovely, though, is I could tell which coach. I could tell if it was football season or basketball season because he had a wonderful football coach who built up the young man as a team. And he had a basketball coach who brought everybody in conflict so they could be mad as hell while they were playing their game. And he thought that he got more out of the men in anger than in team spirit. So, again, we have the power to have the influence to have it go either way. The constant message in the man he is today is the influence of my husband and I and the influence of our extended family and the people he chooses to surround himself with.
Let me grab a phone call. And Lila's been waiting. I appreciate that. Lila, thanks for calling the program. Go ahead.
I have been waiting because I'm just making notes as everybody's talking. I'm 84 years young. I don't say I'm 84 years old because it's such a stereotype to be 84. And I had three children, a son, a daughter, and a son. And the best thing that I told my children is don't be me and don't be daddy. Be the most you could possibly be. And then I always whispered, and the trick is to find people who like you just the way you are. So when I was a little Jewish girl in Brooklyn, my sister was doing everything with the eyelashes, older and wanting to have great, you know, beautiful hair and everything else. Somehow or other, I like playing marbles and being with the boys. So I was called a tomboy. That was not a compliment. But somehow my parents didn't make it seem like it was terrible. So I did just graduate and mature. But I'm thinking about what we're talking about now is what we're talking about, civilization as we see it. What about going into what we call more primitive communities? This is a research opportunity. What is it in the blood or the sex? No one's used the word sex. Do we even know what a sex drive, what makes body chemistry, what makes you feel sexy today or not tomorrow? It's a research opportunity to go to communities that don't have all these stereotypes to see how they're bringing up their people, because there still are people like this who haven't come across, like what we say in 1492, Columbus discovered America. Well, how long was it when I finally said to certain people, what do we think the Indians were, amoeba?
Lila, thank you for the phone. Lila's right. We haven't brought up the word sex a lot. And you know what? There is a separate but parallel conversation here that, and I want to give it time to really air out because writers like David French for National Review have been really rough. And by the way, I respect David French in a lot of ways, and I think it's worth reading a wide range of sources. He thinks that the quote-unquote sexual revolution or sexual liberation has been damaging to our culture. It has made sex too loose and not as valuable, and it hasn't solved anything or brought any sort of progress. The progress that I would see that I don't yet see is sexual agency and respect among men and women, generally speaking. We still hear high school boys talk about girls in ways that are really crude and prizes to be won. And forgive me for using this term, but if I hear one more high school boy talk about who puts out and or those kind of questions, as if that's just something to wear down and earn, as opposed to that. That's why I would love to have David French. And David, I'm going to call you. We're going to be on the show. I don't think we're there yet. Where sex and sexuality can be viewed as something that is possibly positive and enjoyable for men and women, and it's not just a prize to be won and something to be worn down and given up. But Lila's right. I mean, if you could research this in different ways, it would be interesting to see. I just don't know where you're going to find no variables here in the research community.
Well, there is some interesting stats, Lila, I'm not sure even where to find it, but I think a couple of years ago, I read some statistics about tweens and teens having sex, and 19 and and overs. And what they are finding is 30 and under are having less sex than anybody at all times. There has been a drop at that.
Yeah.
And we're not really sure what's going on with that. The other thing about sexuality is so many folks are finding their way now with sexuality and finding their way in it, that we do have an opportunity to actually celebrate sexuality as a natural, equal, kind and loving and consensual thing. For those of us who had the benefit of growing up with a nurse and told the appropriate body part names and all that stuff, that makes you very aware of your body and what's very natural. So if we kind of frame it that sexuality is not a bad thing, it is a part of natural development on who we are, but it by no means is ever a good thing to use sex or sexuality or the threats of it for power and control.
Or to pressure, or to try to coerce.
And it's all part of that gaining and maintaining the power and control that some people feel like they have the right and the privilege to.
And I want to go back to something as we get ready to wrap, what Megan said earlier. Now we have an online culture that didn't exist a generation ago. And so when you have kids growing up into adults thinking that sex, usually boys again, sex is something to be won, a prize, and that for girls it's something to be protected and given up at a certain point for different reasons. And then you have an online community, and you've got frustrated young boys who don't understand why this approach just doesn't work. And somebody commits an act of violence, and it sort of strikes a match. And I'm very concerned about that. So, I mean, it's a broader, more difficult conversation that deserves its own hour.
Easy access to pornography at a younger age.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, think about the access. So there's some information in some places that folks, young people, who have already probably experienced some adverse childhood experience now, adding to the trauma of going into places that nobody should be seeing at any time.
And I think many parents, too, are afraid to have those conversations with their kids. It's a taboo subject, and it can be very awkward. I know in my own little circle of moms and dads and our kids, we are probably the ones who are talking the most about it. So someone came home from the bus and said they learned something on the bus. And I said, oh, gosh, was that my kid telling the other kids? But thank goodness he has the right information. Yes.
Well, speaking of right information, Pamela Graham and Megan Chateauvieux from Willow Domestic Violence Center. How to contact Willow?
Our hotline is 222-SAFE. That's 222-7233. You can go online at willowcenterny.org.
And call for prevention.
And as my boy gets older, we're going to keep teaching the boys in our lives that respect people, respect who they are and their wishes. If you're in a relationship, be as respectful as you can. If that relationship ends, you can live without him or her or them. And that's okay. And they can live without you. And you might be friends and you might not. And it might be better for everybody. And we don't ever have to hurt one another. Our thanks to them, Rob Braden, Megan Mack. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon.